Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
To convince a child to keep walking, try switching roles with them. Let the child play the role of the parent. They'll immediately do what you want them to do.
You are raising in your home people that the Bible is very clear about their status. They need to be converted, not just a conformity of their behavior. They need a transforming encounter with the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the ultimate priority.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
You can get a hold of us here at idea@wretched.org, idea@wretched.org, whatever. Send a question, a comment, a conundrum, a snark, a story. Ooh, we do like the stories here at Wretched Radio. If you have one that you think is right up our alley, please send it to idea@wretched.org. Let me put on my cheaters and get to it, shall we? This is from, not gonna tell you, my pastor. Writes this fellow, is a real inspiration as a God-fearing servant of the Lord. Isn't that nice to hear? Uh-oh. However.
Uh-oh.
Well, however. Yeah. Okay, that's fair. No man is perfect. However, and this pains me to say, and I'm almost ashamed to say, I feel that my biblical knowledge is superior to his. That actually is not uncommon. This is not a flukish sort of situation. I do not speak from arrogance. I sincerely believe I know more about our Christian faith than he does and cannot help but feel that only in personal studies will I grow in knowledge of God. Could be. And not through his sermons. I don't know what to do. I couldn't imagine leaving our church, and I think that's wise. My wife and children love it as well as other members of our family who attend. A very strong consideration. I don't know what to do or if I should do anything at all, but haven't been able to shake this feeling. That is the conundrum. The solution to the problem? I would like for you to imagine just a moment that you're 70 years old. This is a different scenario. You're 70 years old. Your former pastor, whom you loved and honored, has left, retired. And your congregation called somebody who's, let's just say, decades younger than you are. You've been in the faith for 50 years. And in comes the youthful pastor, who is 30 years old. In other words, you've been in the faith longer than they have been alive. What do you do? Would you be wondering if you should leave the church? I think your answer would be no. You would simply recognize, because of your years, you of course have more maturity. You should have more maturity. Now look, our pastors, they should be spiritually advanced. They should be. I think that's just a part of their qualifications. These are not sinless men, but they should be more mature than, let's just say, somebody of the same age. But the reality is, you can only have so much maturity based on your age. You know, with gray hair, that time, that hard-won wisdom through experience is gained. And so the fellow can't possibly be as mature as you are. You wouldn't think about leaving. You just recognize he's not as mature as I am. And I think that's the answer to your question, sir. So you've got a pastor who's not as theologically rich in knowledge as you are. Okay. So he's not. Now, you say, but he's older than I am. And I say, so? It's not his knowledge, per se. It's the office. And so I would suggest that you adopt the same mindset that the 70-year-old man who's been in the faith for 50 years would have toward the pastor 30-year-old. Honor him. Respect him. Pray for him. Encourage him. Help him. Don't subvert him, and be judicious in offering wisdom to him. Now, here's the good news for you. First of all, the Sunday morning sermon, that should be the highlight of the church week, but that should never be the full feeding of a Christian anyway. So we should be feeding along the way during the week. And the good news is you've got oodles of resources that you can tap into. And so when you go to church on Sunday, recognize, okay, he just doesn't have the theological chops. Get out of it what you can. Honor him because of his office and try to encourage him. Not in a sneaky, underhanded way, but because you'd like him to have that sort of knowledge. And then just help him as you can and be careful that you don't pick him to pieces. And then what help you offer him? Okay. an example. I don't even know that this is a good one. Johnny Gravino is leading a seminary in Sicily. Pray for that ministry, by the way. Italy, the graveyard of missionaries. But I got to tell you, it's starting to happen at ITA. I'm seeing the pictures of the number of men that they're training to go out to their churches in villages around Italy, right in the shadow of the Vatican. And that seminary is actually getting stronger all the time. So our pastor is going over there, and he's going to be preaching, and he's talking about the Protestant Reformation. Well, the article that I wrote was about the Protestant Reformation. And I thought, ooh, this could be something he might want to consider using as he goes about that tour. I typed in his name. Boop. There it pops up. Ty Blackburn at whatever the address was. Nah, I'm not going to send it to him. And I hit delete and didn't. Why? Because I didn't want him to get the sense of, you need this. Look, he's a great preacher. And he's a godly man. I don't know if he's younger or older than I am. That's not even the point. Biological or chronological age, it's not the issue. He's my pastor, and I didn't want him to get the sense of, here, you need this for your tree. Even if I put it in all kinds of flowery language of, hey, I just thought that maybe if you possibly wanted to, thought you might have, I didn't want to be getting the sense of, you need help. So I didn't send it. We need to be very judicious about the things that we send to our pastor. Like, they love the flock. Their sacrifice for the flock is tremendous. And they want everybody to be growing, and they're sensitive to everybody's considerations and their needs. And so when they can get a newsletter, an email sent to them that could be perceived as being critical or that they're failing in some way, it can strike. We don't want to be doing that to our pastor. So be judicious. All right, gentlemen, anything that you would add to that concept? Anything? No. Anything at all?
I would, pretty much.
I would, but I'm not old enough.
Exactly.
Did Flipper. I miss the point?
Snapper.
So close.
Okay. Here now, may or may not be. Let me do it this way, because this particular story did not catch fire. This is the story about a pastor. It's certain that you know about whom I'm speaking if you followed this story. It didn't blow up on the internet. It had a little activity, but I don't think it was like, wow, all the rage. And so I'm just gonna leave this person nameless. Now, there are times we'll names. When are those times? When it is appropriate. When is it appropriate? When it is a national story. I'm not just finding out some dish from a local congregation of a pastor that the majority of people are not aware of. I don't want to start a fire. I don't want to fan the flames of any sort of bad story. But if it's common knowledge, okay. If I think I can contribute something, okay. Those are some of the things that we need to consider before we start criticizing somebody. And if our story doesn't meet that criteria, then don't. And so I don't think that this story met that criteria. It was close, but not quite. It was a story of a pastor who didn't write an article. Instead, somebody at his ministry wrote an article that could have been interpreted to mean that works were necessary for justification. It could have been interpreted that way. So a fair number of people, like I said, it wasn't a wildfire, but a fair number of people said, yikes, is this very, very famous pastor now a heretic? Okay, that we can ask that of anybody. That's fair. But a couple of things. Number one, while he heads up that ministry, he didn't even write the article. And yet it was interesting that so many people ascribed the article to him. I suspect he didn't even read the article. Now, how it made it through the vetting process, I don't know. So at any rate, I decided to contact an elder. And I'll mention his name, Phil Johnson. I said, how are you responding to this story? And this is what he said. I'm 95% certain that this pastor isn't trying to make justification into a process like the Roman Catholic Church does, or a two-stage decree. As I read, he's simply saying that sanctification, at least the article is saying, is a necessary part of the Ordo Salutis, the order of salvation. He's arguing against antinomianism. If the article has a defect, it's brevity. Could have been clearer. It should have been made a little longer, because we've got to be careful. And there's been more talk of the and it's good talk, about justification and sanctification, the role of works. There is an antinomian stream, and I think it's starting to dry up a little bit, which is a good thing. That just, hey, no effort, no works, that's legalism. No, it's not. That's called sanctification. And if you're justified, you will necessarily do the, you will necessarily do those works, but those works won't save you, but they are an indicator that you are saved. And so that distinction needs to be loud and clear. This one was just a little bit muddy. And it just wasn't spelled out as much as it can. So what do I do with this pastor? First of all, I recognize, one, I'm going to give him a pass because he didn't write the article, and I suspect, unless we hear from him, he wasn't even aware of it. Number two, I look at this man's life. And while this particular pastor, there are some things that he's done where I just go, nothing heretical. So am I going to be critical of a pastor who has served faithfully for decades, served well for decades, because of something that could be in kind of, no, I'm not going to do that. Why? Because there's never been an instance where you'd be inclined to say that fellow's a heretic. All that to say, some of the worst discerners on the planet are discernment ministries. Let's not follow suit. This is Wretched Radio. If you have been looking for a reason to sponsor your very own Tomorrow Club in Eastern Europe, perhaps this story from Max, the national director in Ukraine, will inspire you to visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Arsène, just 5 years old, escaped his home and came to the camp. His grandmother would not let him. She was cursing all Christians. His grandmother sadly passes away. So he kept coming. Not only that, he brought his parents and they repented. So this family gives the house where the grandma used to live to the church. And that's where the Tomorrow Club meets.
And that story is not a one-off. Families getting saved constantly through the Tomorrow Clubs in Eastern Europe. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? 30 disciples, $30 per month. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
If you love Don't Stub Your Toe and its thorough gospel presentation, then you're going to love Wretched's evangelistic booklet, Are You a Rotten Fish? If there's someone in your life that you fear is a false convert, or you want to make sure the church isn't filled with false converts, Are You a Rotten Fish is perfect for you. Are You a Rotten Fish is an informative booklet about true and false conversions. You know, wheat and tares, wise virgins and foolish virgins, good fish and rotten fish. Are You a Rotten Fish compares and contrasts the true gospel versus false gospels, the correct response of repent and trust versus, well, all the incorrect responses like asking Jesus into your heart. All you have to do is hop on your phone or favorite computing device and visit wretched.org/fish and order your copies today. wretched.org/fish for your copies of Are You a Rotten Fish for you and your family and your church. wretched.org/fish.
Forget the power of cheese, the power of the ultrasound.
Darlene came to our clinic. She's accompanied by her boyfriend. She just came from Planned Parenthood, but they were unable to provide an ultrasound because they charge for them, and she probably didn't have the money. When she's in the counseling room, apart from her boyfriend, she says that the relationship with the baby's father was probably going to end anyway. So she wanted to abort, presented the gospel. She politely declined the gospel. We gave her an ultrasound, and she walked out the door, still abortion-minded, with the ultrasound picture in hand. We made another call for her a couple days later, and she said, you know, I can't come in, but do you know where I can get some prenatal vitamins? And she had chose life.
One ultrasound, $28. $28, one life. How many ultrasounds could you provide through preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Christians are called to make disciples, but where do we start? Hearts for the Lost assists local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They'll fly out to your church to put on an evangelism seminar and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. Heartsforthelost.com.
Books of the Bible. 2 Timothy is Paul's last letter before his execution. He encourages Timothy to persevere amidst suffering. Paul had suffered for the sake of the gospel, but he also knew the beauty and power of the gospel. He charges Timothy to cling to and preach the gospel. When you face opposition, do not fear or be ashamed, but trust God and rely on his word. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The second way to get a hold of us is the old beep talk machine.
1-877-282-BEEP.
This is Wretched Radio. That is the number of the old toll free. Call 1-877-282-BEEP. Remember the rules. Only two. If you are not a believer, ixnay on the erring sway. And for either pagan or believer, pithy, keep it pithy. For Joey's sake, his napping schedule, it is quite onerous, so the shorter, the tighter it can be, the less editing that he needs to do so he can nap.
Hi, Todd.
Hello.
It says in James 1:5-9, it talks about fear and double-mindedness. I was just wondering, if we're fearing, does that mean we're double-minded?
I'm kind of confused.
That's a
pithy question right there. This would be First James. I guess that's not technically wrong, even though there's not a second James. 1:5-9, if any of you lacks wisdom, anybody lacking wisdom, let him ask of God. By the way, that's specific wisdom. I don't think that's a generalized wisdom. Like, come to me, I'm a sage. The context, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, regarding what? That issue. Not general wisdom, although I think you could extend it beyond that. Let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, driven and tossed by the wind. For let not that man suppose that he will receive anything from the Lord. He is double-minded and unstable in all his ways. She asked about fear in that context, right?
Hi, Todd. It says in James 1:5-9, it talks about fear and double-mindedness. I was just wondering, if we're fearing, does that mean we're double-minded?
The context of this, I'm not sure about the fear part of it, but I would still say that fear is, in a sense, double-minded. But I wouldn't use this verse to support the concept of all double-mindedness. The context is going to determine this type of double-mindedness. Remember what James is getting at. You are persecuted. You are scattered abroad. That's what the first verse tells us. James, a bondservant to the 12 tribes which are scattered. So these are people who are Jewish, who are living most likely in Jerusalem, probably about the time of the Stephen persecution when it began. And they were scattered abroad. Life is hard. What does he say to them? Count it all joy. When you are surrounded by trials, when it is hard, knowing this testing that God is doing something for you in this. What's he doing? He's wanting it to have its perfect work, that you may be complete, lacking nothing, that you may become Christ-like. Now, if any of you lacks wisdom, how to get there, how to do this, how to endure, ask God to help you. Let him ask of God, who gives liberally, but let him ask in faith, with no doubting, for he who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. Now, can we extend the idea that when we're not trusting God, we're being double-minded? Yes, we can. If somebody is living a life, and this is typically so true of younger people, teenagers perhaps specifically, they've got a foot on the road of wisdom. They've got another foot on the path of folly. They're trying to act like a Christian, but the world is calling them. It would be fair to say you're being double-minded. You've got a foot in, you've got a foot out. Having said that, this context specifically talks about the double-mindedness of not believing that God can do for you what he desires to do for you. Now, that's the context of that double-mindedness. Am I being double-minded when I have fear? And the answer to that is, yeah, I think so. But this verse doesn't teach that directly. So how do I conclude you're double-minded? Because it's the same principle. When I'm afraid of anything besides God himself, why am I double-minded? Because I'm not fully believing God. That no matter what befalls me, I'm going to be okay. Even if something painful happens, that he's prepared a place for me. And I'm going there, and it is going to be amazing. And so I can endure this. I can get through this because he will sustain me in this. When I'm fearful of events, then I'm not trusting God. So in that sense, I am being double-minded. Furthermore, I'll go a step further. You are being double-minded when you're fearing death. God has your death date designed. He's picked it. He's determined what it's going to be. And if you're still fearing death, in a sense, you're double-minded. I wouldn't use James chapter 1 to say that's the support text for that. But the concept of double-mindedness applies. Perfect love casts out all fear, said John. Fear of what? Context says death. When you are believing God rightly, when you're loving God totally, you don't fear death because death has been defeated. You don't have to worry about death. And so when you do panic about it, you get yourself whatever it is, the way that you get yourself whipped up and concerned about something, you're worried about dying, you're not trusting God. So in that sense, too, you are double-minded. Having said all of that, make sure that when you see a word that jumps out, that you let the context determine the meaning of that word.
Yes, I was wondering your advice about me being a pastor, and my parents wanted to buy me a new vehicle, a Ford Mustang, when I graduate my master's, my doctor of ministry next year. But I'm afraid it might cause problems in the church. What would your advice be? Because I don't want to cause problems in the church, but I want to honor my father and mother.
You know what? Good on you. That's something that we should all be considering all the time, isn't it? What does this say to the world? What does this say to the church? Whether it's a car, whether it's a house, clothing, haircut, all of those things. I don't do this for me anymore. I don't dress for me anymore. I dress for my testimony. I dress for my master. Now, especially, I would say, as a pastor, you need to be mindful of those things. So how do you work that conundrum out? You're concerned. Was it a Mustang, I believe? Super cool car.
Yep.
I think you're right in being concerned about that because it does say something about you. Now, you woke up one morning. There's a note on your door with a car key to a Mustang. Who gave it to you? You have no idea. It was a gift. It's all your... There's the title. Everything is ready to roll. Do you drive it? Well, you might be inclined to go, well, it was just given to me. Why wouldn't I do that? And the answer to that question is because it might besmirch your testimony. It might cause somebody to go, what kind of a pastor is that anyway? Especially in our current context, our current culture that is so saturated with prosperity preachers. I just heard Ben Shapiro, even he was taking Joel Osteen to school, recognizing there's something about these prosperity preachers. It ain't right. They see the lavish lifestyle, and that can be represented in a single automobile, even if you live in something that is very modest. It travels with you, and you need to ask yourself the question, what does this say to the world? Does it undermine my testimony, particularly as a pastor? And I think you're right with a car like that to say so, even if it's free, because you could justify it in your brain and say, well, it was free and I'd be a bad steward if I didn't use it. Yeah, but do the people who see you driving down the street know that? Or are you going to put a sign in the back, this was given to me, so don't think that I'm a prosperity hack? Probably not. So what do you do when your parents want to give it to you? Just sit down and talk to them lovingly. Mom and Dad, I'm so grateful for you. I love you. I honor you. I respect you. But as you know, I am thinking about going into ministry. And I just don't think that a Mustang is compatible with that office. So if you don't want to give me a car at all because you're offended by that, I'm truly sorry, and I understand totally. If, however, we'd like to like take a look at something else that's maybe more befitting, it better bespeaks the office, could we do that together? I'd love to spend the weekend doing that with you. And I'm guessing most times they're going to be pretty groovy with that.
I was wondering if you think that ongoing unrepentant physical abuse in a marriage qualifies as abandonment and therefore grounds for legitimate divorce.
That's interesting. You know, some people took me to school on a comment. It was just kind of an off-the-cuff comment for a video that we put up on the Facebook page. And I said, I don't see abuse as being grounds for divorce. Now, I will immediately state that does not mean grounds for staying and getting abused. You separate. You get to a safe place until the spouse repents. And if that spouse doesn't repent and still is threatening, doesn't have their anger under control, you stay away. But I still don't think that the Bible gives grounds for that. Now, I see how you're reasoning, that abuse is like separation. Well, but it's not. It's abuse. And the Bible says if your spouse runs away and doesn't come back, if your spouse has ongoing infidelity or your spouse dies, you're free to remarry. I just don't see it in the Bible. Now, if anybody wants to send me an email explaining that, idea@wretched.org or Beep Talk, you can do that at 1-877-282-BEEP. Let me say this loudly and clearly, though, because there seem to be some people who missed this the first time. I'm not suggesting you stay and expose yourself to violence. Get out and call the police to boot. Find a safe place and only return when you work with your elders to determine it is safe to do so. But unless you can find a specific verse that indicates that abuse is grounds for divorce, as awful as it is, I don't think there is. This is Wretched Radio.
Sometimes simple is best. The Mission Ball is simply a soccer ball covered with biblical text, a thorough law and gospel presentation, and an effective tool for drawing a crowd, making a connection with people, inviting curiosity, and ultimately creating opportunities to proclaim Christ. With your support, the Mission Ball can get into the hands of more lost and dying souls. Go to themissionball.org. That's themissionball.org. This is Wretched Radio. Hi, I'm Tony Verkennis. Where to begin? We'll start in Washington. Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, has agreed to rule on whether Louisiana can require abortionists to have admitting privileges at a nearby hospital in case complications occur. A federal judge originally struck down the state law on the grounds it imposed an undue burden on abortion access. The justices will likely hear arguments this winter and announce a decision by the end of next June. Opponents of the law say it could result in the closure of one or two of Louisiana's three abortion facilities. The state argues abortionists haven't tried hard enough to establish relationships with local hospitals, and the law is necessary to protect women. A similar law was struck down by the Supreme Court 3 years ago. Religious leaders from several groups gathered at an abortion clinic in McAllen, Texas, Wednesday to express their support and bless it, although the event received plenty of criticism on social media. The gathering at Whole Women's Health in McAllen was organized by the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. Can someone explain how that can even be a thing? Just Texas and Catholics for Choice, and was similar to blessings previously held in Austin and Fort Worth. The Reverend Kerry Jackson, something wrong there, clergy in residence with the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, told supporters that pro-life laws restricting abortion are ungodly, unconstitutional, and unacceptable. Wow, open a Bible once, would you? Gabby Garcia Vera of Catholics for Choice said, quoting now, "Faith is not copyrighted by the small band of anti-abortion protesters outside a clinic, but alive and well in the passion and commitment so many abortion providers inside the clinic." Wow. According to the press release, the leaders gathered at the clinic to, quote, "bless the only Texas abortion clinic south of San Antonio." The TV station's Facebook page, though, featured mostly negative reactions. Well, there is that. How can you be clergy and support killing babies? That's just mind-boggling. Earlier this week, the Department of Health and Human Services announced that $33.6 million in Title X funding will be reallocated to 50 other groups and not Planned Parenthood. Thank you very much. The pronouncement came after the Trump administration created Title X Protect Life Rule in 2019. It refuses to provide federal funds for organizations that refer to abortion services. That money will now funnel to health departments and clinics across the U.S. to help meet needs caused by the loss of federal funding from Planned Parenthood and other organizations that refuse to comply. If you're wondering, other organizations that lost funding besides Planned Parenthood included government health departments in New York, Massachusetts, Maryland, Illinois, Vermont, and Oregon. Alabama, Arizona, Mississippi, and Delaware will thus receive additional Title X funding. For Wretched Radio Straight Ahead, I'm Tony Vercanis.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is service, the spiritual ability to meet people's physical needs. Just as Christ came not to be served, but to serve, God provides the office of deacon, those who are charged and equipped to care for the physical needs of the church. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
So glad you called, Carol. This is Wretched Radio. Received a beep talk from Carol. You can beep talk too at 1-877-282-BEEP. She said she took up an encouragement. I don't think that I banged my fist on the table, but I think last week I said, wouldn't it be great if more of us invaded nursing homes? I mean, well, not like, you know, like some sort of Nazi invasion or World War II Normandy type of invasion, but we went in and we ministered to people. We read the Bible to people. We evangelized people. We set up Sunday services for people. We went on Wednesday nights for people. There's going to be Christians there who will be so encouraged, and I suspect a lot of bored unbelievers might just come and listen. And so Carol called in and said, so I did. She didn't even ask for permission. She just went. You might want to do that. It might be a good idea just to check in at the front desk. Hi, I'm just here to go room to room to read the Bible to people. See you soon. And then just go and do your thing and be polite. Would you like me to read the Bible to you? And if they say no, move along. Somebody will be more than happy to spend some time talking to you. She did that. And she shared that when she called 1-877-282-BEEP, our toll-free Beep Talk message number. Which reminded me that I'm going to be going to a nursing home and I've been working on a sermon.
To preach, right?
And you're going to get a bit of it, whether you like it or not. Friel, we don't. Here it goes anyway. Here's how this thing came about. I was thinking, okay, I'm going to be going into a nursing home. I want to be mindful of the demographic, mostly Christians, but people with a lot of free time on their hands. So I thought, okay, well, I want to be encouraging. I don't want to be condescending because they're older than I am. They know more than I am. I want to show reverence and respect to them, honoring them correctly. And so I was playing around with some ideas, and then in a moment of complete weakness, I did something that I never did. I actually demonstrated some wisdom. I was just a complete out-of-character moment. It wasn't even my idea. I received an email from a buddy of mine, Highland Goodman. Lovely Christian pastor. Godly man. He spent, I don't know how many years, as the... I think he was known as the chaplain at a senior facility. It's an amazing place, actually, in Buffalo, Minnesota. It sits on the lake there in Buffalo. It's a rural. Is Buffalo still rural, or is it a suburb now? Still out there a little bit?
No, it's out there. Yeah.
Okay. So Buffalo, you know, the creep, how it happens in every town. So there he is in this facility, and I just thought it was brilliant. I believe that it was run by Evangelical Free Church of America. They have a part of the campus. You don't need much help. You're just doing your. You just basically do your thing. You go to the grocery store. You're still driving, and then you go to the next level where maybe you can't drive. You need meals prepared, etc. Then you go to the next level where you need more care, around the clock care. So you kind of, if you will, graduate from one to the next based on your needs, all in the same place. How smart is that? And he was the chaplain there for 12 years, 17 years, I can't recall. And he served faithfully, and he'd send me an email. And I went, duh! Rather than trying to concoct my own idea for us, you know, okay, because it's going to be topic. I mean, it's going to be expository, but you got to pick a verse somehow. So I said, hey, Highland, so glad I had this brilliant idea to contact you after you reached out to me. I get to preach to some seniors at a senior center. What would you preach? And he shared something that I thought was very interesting. Because now that I'm over 30, I occasionally will have these thoughts too. And I suspect, what? I'm over 30. And I suspect that in increasing measure this can happen, especially when you have a lot of free time, as do people in a senior center that are not ambulatory. They're maybe confined to that facility. They do activities, but they've got more time to think back, to remember. And Highland said
that his experience with people, Christians, regrets. They've had a few. But then again, they tend to remember and ruminate on them. And so he gave me the idea to use Micah chapter 7, verses 18 and 19. I haven't dived into the text enough yet, into the Hebrew language. We use the term that God throws our sins into the sea of forgetfulness. It doesn't say the sea of forgetfulness, at least not in the NASB. Hold on. As long as I'm doing sermon prep, let me take a look at the New King James Version. Thank you very much. That's in the Old Testament. Lamentation, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. Okay, got it. So, what? We all need our little mechanisms when it comes to those small Old Testament prophet books. This is Micah chapter 7 and verses 18 and 19 from the New King James Version. I had looked at the NASB. Who is a God like you, pardoning iniquity? I want to look up that word pardon to see what that means too. And passing over the transgression of the remnant of his heritage. He does not retain his anger forever because he delights in mercy. What a joy to preach that. He will again have compassion on us and will subdue our iniquities. You, Lord, will cast all our sins into the depths of the sea. Okay, so no sea of forgetfulness there. And we want to be careful with that idea of sea of forgetfulness because, of course, God doesn't forget literally, that he doesn't remember them. How do I know that? Well, the Bible is replete with teachings that he is omniscient. That's firmly established, so he couldn't possibly forget because that would mean he's not omniscient. Furthermore, if God did forget, we have this habit of bringing them up, and that which is the very thing that I'm going to be preaching about, to eventually stop bringing them up because that's the point of this text. God doesn't bring them up. He knows them, certainly. Otherwise, when we bring them up to him, we'd have to go, hold on, I've got to go check into that. We maybe have some records of it someplace. How dopey is that? God remembers it, but he doesn't toss them into your face. He doesn't bring them up. Furthermore, to simply forget them would be to what? Forget God's grace. So we want to remember them too. But we don't want to be living in perpetual regret. Now, that is not to say that we don't ever want to have regrets over things that we did in the past. We have biffed it over and over again, and that doesn't mean that you can't have regrets. But we should remember them in order to remember that God has forgiven me of those sins. They're gone. They really are gone. And so I can have regrets for a season, but I can't feel guilty anymore because I'm not. Now, how long should you have regrets? I don't know, but they should be increasingly less. Because if you continue with constant regret over past sins that have already been forgiven, I believe it could be a wee bit narcissistic. It could be that you just like to dwell on them because you maybe like the feeling of feeling bad, that maybe you think that feeling bad will somehow atone for the sins, that you'll be demonstrating your contrition. They are gone. So eventually, they should decreasingly stop feeling so painful. But ultimately, we never want to forget them because to forget our past sins is to forget the goodness of the cross and what Jesus did for us. Furthermore, to not want to remember them and to simply feel rotten about them forever is to fail to remember God's sovereignty. That God is... Those things, when you sinned, God was sovereign over those. No, he did not cause you to sin, but he permitted you to sin. Otherwise, you wouldn't have sinned if he hadn't given you permission to do it, because you do nothing without his permission, including sin. He's not responsible. You are. But when we remember that all the things that God does for his children are good, we can look back at it and go, oh, I hurt somebody. I wounded somebody. I failed my kids. I didn't do this. I should have done that. That was a bad business decision. I caused harm. I got divorced. I shouldn't have, whatever it is. And we've got to remember that God is sovereign and that there was good in that for you. And that we need to remember that if we hold on to that sin, we are in danger potentially of thinking that we can out-sin God. Oh, I've got to hold on to that one. Yeah, I've been forgiven for all of those bad boys, but this one was too ugly. I had an abortion. I can't. That's when you run to 1 Corinthians 6:9, and it's not an exhaustive list, but it's long enough of a list to give the message, you are not so bad that God couldn't forgive you. And then we can run to all of the verses that remind us, like Psalm 103, that God, doesn't matter how big your sin was, God forgives your sins. And that we should rejoice in that and have joy when we look back at our sins. Am I saying today? No, but I should think that should be the trajectory. Yes, you can feel bad about them. You can't feel guilty about them because you're not guilty anymore. Increasingly, you will stop. So I guess it would be decreasingly. You will stop feeling regret and increasingly feel joy about the sins that you've committed because, wow, God forgave me for those things. Who is a God like this? And it takes us back then to the rejoicing and the praise almost that's coming out of Micah. Who is a God like you pardoning iniquity like mine? And so the trajectory should be feeling bad, feeling regrets, decreasing, and suddenly an increasing joy can be yours. So if you're sitting in a nursing home or you're in the prime of your life and you have regrets, if you have repented and put your trust in Jesus Christ, they are gone. God does not toss them into your face anymore, and you should not either. Let that lead you to love God more. And I look forward to seeing you folks in the nursing home. And hopefully, by that time, I'll have all those rough edges kind of honed off. Thanks for letting me practice. It's a good gospel, isn't it? This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you for joining us today. Always appreciate when you spend part of your day with Wretched Radio. Can we talk prison initiative? You see, within 3 years of release, almost two-thirds of released prisoners are rearrested. And within 5 years of release, that number goes up to about three-quarters of released prisoners back in jail. We think those numbers are simply too high. And we think the gospel will help. We would very much like to give away our gospel booklet, Don't Stub Your Toe, to prison ministries so they can get them inside to the prisoners. Can you help? Wretched.org/donate if you're able. Wretched.org/donate. If you're a prison ministry and you would be interested in handing out Don't Stub Your Toe, contact Al, please. It's very easy. Al@wretched.org. Al@wretched.org. A big thank you to our gospel partners. It's their generosity that makes this possible. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Couldn't say it any better than Michael Woolworth from Bible League International.
The world will drill wells and provide food and shelter. Those are very important causes. Yes. We smile favorably upon those. But getting God's word to believers half a world away, people you won't meet this side of eternity, that's on us as God's people.
Ain't nothing wrong with digging a well, but it is only the Christian church that can provide living water. Bible League International for decades, delivering Bibles to believers. Believers who have made a profession of faith, believers who have studied the basics of the Christian faith, are then given living water in the Word, a Bible, for just $5 per Bible. You could deliver a Bible to a believer overseas through Bible League International. Might it be possible you could send, say, 6 per month? Please call Bible League at 1-800-YES-WORD.
Well done, you. So far, you have given away 500,000 copies of What Time is Purple. Way to go. See, our goal at Wretched is to give away 1,000,000 copies of What Time is Purple. And hopefully we've made it easy for you. If you pay for shipping and promise to give them away, it's our pleasure to provide you with up to 50 of these evangelistic booklets at no charge. Just go to wretched.org/purple to get your copies. Now, if you or your organization need more than 50 copies, then you email jen@wretched.org. That's J-E-N, jen@wretched.org, to make your request, including details, please, on how you plan to distribute them. Now, if you would like to read What Time is Purple and or receive information on how to distribute this booklet, just go to whattimeispurple.com. To get your free copies of What Time is Purple to hand out on our way to 1,000,000, visit wretched.org/purple for your copies today. That's wretched.org/purple.
Attributes of God. Psalm 139 tells us that God is omnipresent. If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol,
You are there. God is not only outside and above his creation. He is present in every place, seeing what is happening. This is a comfort for those who love him, but a terror to those who hate him. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's get to it, shall we?
1-877-282-BEEP.
This is Wretched Radio. Thank you for calling Beep Talk 1-877-282-BEEP. Leave a question, comment, conundrum, or snark. Look what I saw on my desk that distracted me like a squirrel. It's who's that, Tony? Who is it? Who is
That'd
it?
That'd be Martin Luther on Table Talk magazine.
That would be the man right there, Martin Luther. Well beloved by, what are they called? Oh yeah, Lutherans. This is Table Talk. They do a very fine job at Table Talk. Of course, Martin Luther, the symbolic kicker-offer of the Reformation. There were certainly other reformers, even a morning star who came before, and there certainly were other believers. There were some people who did believe in grace alone long before Martin Luther tripped onto it, because the Church of Jesus Christ, not of Latter-day Saints, has always existed. Gates of hell won't overcome it. So even though the Roman Catholic Church was quite wonky in the Middle Ages when Martin Luther came along, there were always people who believed the gospel of grace alone through faith alone and Jesus alone. It's just that when he banged those theses into the wall, into the church door at Wittenberg, it's the symbolic kicking off of the Protestant Reformation, which we're celebrating this year a lot. Hoping that you are too. Teach your kids about their Protestant Reformation heritage. We won't do this today, but Heath Lambert, he wrote, it's around here someplace, he wrote the 95 Theses for Biblical Counseling. Outstanding. We'll tackle that another day, but not today because, well, there's 95 of them. Instead, let's get to your Beep Talks at 1-877-282-BEEP, shall we?
How do I feel comfortable taking my children to a church when I've been abused, sexually abused, in my past by church leadership?
Oh, boy. I want to make sure that I understood you and heard you correctly.
How do I feel comfortable taking my children to a church when I've been abused, sexually abused, in my past by church leadership?
Yeah. Might I say two things to you first, madam? First of all, I'm very sorry. Nobody should ever be sexually abused. Nobody. Ever. But to be sexually abused in a church, ooh, the wickedness. Even the world gets that. Why do they report on stories of pastors who stab their wife in the middle of the night, claiming it's Benadryl or whatever allergy medicine that made him do it? And they're just aghast. Why? Because they even recognize those things shouldn't happen in the church. Sexual abuse, especially in the church, is so wicked, and I'm very, very sorry for that. And the second thing that I would say to you is thank you for having the courage of bringing it up. I think this is a subject that just needs to be addressed more very carefully because, and this is going to perhaps address your question, madam, we don't want to make every Christian, every pastor, every youth minister, every church sound like a den of sexual perverts, for they are not. So we don't want to be talking about all churches like, hey, you've got to be looking out for this sexual abuse thing because this is what's going on. No, no, we don't want to make blanket statements like that. Having said that, to not be aware that this happens, even in good churches, is to simply be naive, foolish, and mean. And to not uphold the gospel of Jesus Christ and protect people, especially women and children. And so we need to handle this subject carefully. So I'm glad you brought it up. I think what you need to do, madam, is first of all, I would encourage you to tend to your own wounds. They are lingering. I don't know where you're at in the continuum of healing. So maybe you're well down that road. But if not, biblical counseling could help you so much, so profoundly. And just to get you kicked off and started, visit rickthomas.net. Use a search engine for sexual abuse. It will help you. and it will get you started down the road to healing. You could also be working with somebody in your church who is a biblical counselor. You should put the oxygen mask on yourself. Now, these things are going to run in parallel, not in series. What do you do with your kids? You've got apprehensions. You are wise to check out the structure that a church has put in place for the safety and protection of children. And I will make this a blanket statement. If there is a church that does not have any sort of system set up, I would not say that it is an unorthodox church. I would not say it is a heretical church, but I would say do not leave your children in the care of that church. If they are so either uneducated, and that is a possibility, or naive, or thinking that their church is beyond this, or this could never happen here, you should not give them your children, period. You have every right, and you have the responsibility to ask, what are the safeguards that are put in place for my children? And if you do not feel comfortable, do not do it. Bring the kids with you everywhere you go to make sure that they are safe. Every church should have structures put into place. It's our duty. These tender little lambs that God has given into our care, we need to protect them. And we need to be careful about things like sleepovers, even at church. Church trips, church camps, a lot of very wicked things have happened in those places. Oh, not at church camp. The kids are just sleeping alone in the cabins with no supervision. Are you kidding me? We cannot be too vigilant on this. Now, do we want to make sure that we don't cross the line into, oh, the horrors of sex, it's all dirty and horrible? No, we don't want to give that impression either, because we don't want kids growing up, dirty, dirty, sex is dirty, dirty, it's awful, it's dirty. No, it's not. It's beautiful, it's wonderful, it's magnificent, it's amazing, and it's for you when you get married to somebody of the opposite gender for life. That's, and you'll get to enjoy it then. So let's not make it the shameful thing, but let's be protective and let us be wise. And so, madam, how can you leave your kids with people at your church with your past? Get some healing. There's plenty available for you. I just mentioned the 95 Theses of Biblical Counseling. Believe me, the Bible has everything you need to overcome that traumatic past, that wicked thing that happened to you that was not your fault. Did you hear me, madam? It was not your fault. Maybe somebody has implied it was. Well, you dressed a certain way. You walked a certain way. You seem to be asking for it. It's their sin, not yours. They committed a crime against you, which is another shout out I must make at this time, because I unfortunately received too many emails from people sent to idea@wretched.org saying that they're being abused by a spouse. What should you do if your spouse physically or even sexually molests you, and we know the difference? What do you do? Number one, you call this number. It's only three digits. Starts with 9. In the middle is a 1, and it ends with a 1. Call the police. That is a criminal act. And your husband has stepped out of the bounds of church authority into the authority of the government. You say, well, my husband might go to jail. Yep. That's what happens to criminals. It does not matter where they committed the crime. That's what our government does with them. You say, my husband, he'll be embarrassed at church. Yep. He sure will. That's what happens when you commit a crime. You should feel shame. You say, my husband, they might cause me to not live with him for a while. Yep, that's right. And if you're in an ongoing abusive situation, the Bible does not give you permission to divorce. Okay? The Bible doesn't give you permission to do that. But the Bible doesn't say that you need to stay in that home and get abused. And so you should work with your pastor and your elders to find a safe place to go so that you no longer have criminal acts committed against you. This is an issue the church should be at the forefront of, not lingering behind. What's the plan? What are we supposed to do? What's the protocol for this? We got to get this figured out fast and start leading the way and calling these things what they are and protecting our women and our children. So, madam, I believe that if you seek out biblical counseling, you make sure that the structures that are put in place for your children are sound, then I think that you will start to increasingly feel okay about leaving your kids with somebody at church, because not all churches are horrible and not all Christians are molesters. And once again, I'm very, very sorry.
I was married 37 years and my wife decided to leave me for sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I remarried. Do you think that I'm living in adultery because I have remarried?
No. She left, right? That's if she died, you're no longer married. If she was ongoing unfaithfulness, and that sounds like it, you're not married. An abandonment, you're not married. She committed sins. Now, can you stay? Can you just hold out hope that she'll change? Of course. But have you sinned if you have remarried? No, you have not. Because she broke the covenant and you are free. Please, though, having said that, consult with your pastor who can dig into the details, because there always are. And I'm sorry that that happened to you too, sir. 37 years. The pain in the world. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.